Life Story of St. John Bosco. Part 1. Young John Bosco. God, it is said, sends the world's saints when they are most needed. Not men and women of general holiness, but specialized experts who fit into the pattern of the times and are capable of giving God's tone to their century. And so it was that on August 16, 1815, when one era was closing in Europe with the exile of Napoleon and the Industrial Revolution was clanging another open, a man was sent by God, whose name was John. He came to the scrubby stone cottage of Francis and Margaret Bosco on the hills of Becky, at the foot of the Italian Alps. A fine, healthy baby, the neighbors all agreed, fit for the soil to take his father's place on the old homestead. But no one went further than that in predicting the child's future. Francis died only 2 years after John's birth, leaving Margaret to raise 3 boys by herself. She taught them that they each needed to carry his own weight and help with the upkeep of their home and farm. There were house chores to do, firewood to cut and gather, fields to plow, and crops to tend. Little John and his older brother Joseph, supervised by their stepbrother Anthony, tackled the endless work with energy. Margaret taught them that work was a privilege and that joy would make the work lighter. She was a woman of character and tenderness. All who knew her called her Mama Margaret. Fathomless was the love she showed her sons, not in cuddling words, but in deeds. Innumerable were the lessons in upright living, Christian fortitude, and fear of God, which she taught by her example. A pillar of goodness, she stood before them as sturdy as the very Alps. At her knee, John first heard the voice of the master calling him to a special assignment. It was low, insistent voice, an urge that once in a while manifested itself in a sudden outburst, like the time Margaret and John were walking along the countryside and met one of the local priests. "Hello, Father," cried the boy, to be acknowledged only by a curt bow of the head. Deeply hurt, he complained that the priest had hurt his feelings. "When I grow up," he told his astonished mother, "I'm going to be a priest, and I'll talk to children all the time, and I'll do everything for them." Again, the voice urged John to go among the farm boys, not just as a playmate, but as a leader. More than once, he came home with a battered cheek or a torn shirt, and in explanation would say, "But Mama, those boys aren't really bad. They just don't have a good mother like I have, and they don't know their catechism, and their parents don't take them to church. When I'm with them, they behave better. Please, Mama, may I go with them?" Soon the child took over completely as God's plan called for. He learned the tricks of magic from traveling showmen. He juggled, he walked the tightrope, then he opened his own carnival show. Admission, 1 rosary to be recited by all spectators. Added attraction, the Sunday sermon repeated by the little ringmaster. The showgrounds were the field in front of the house, where Margaret Bosco often watched her son at work and wondered what might come of it all. The Life Story of St. John Bosco. Part 2. The Call. When John was 9, the master called him openly. A mission as important as his could not be left to a mere urge. In a dream, John found himself fighting a large crowd of rowdy boys who were cursing and carrying on abominably. He tried to stop them, but they refused to listen to him. Suddenly, a man appeared who motioned to John and said, "Not with blows will you help these boys, but with goodness and kindness." "Who are you?" gasped the astonished boy. Then a woman appeared. Putting her arms around him, she said, "Watch what I do, John." John looked. The boys changed to a pack of snarling wild animals whose growls sent terror to his heart. Then the woman put out her hand. The beasts changed again to a frolicking flock of lambs. "But what does it all mean? I'm just a farm boy. What can I do?" He burst into tears. The lady's answer came to him, ever to resound in his heart, to be repeated audibly several times in his life. This is the field of your work. Be humble, steadfast, and strong. John now knew his vocation, but the priesthood meant studies, and there was no money on the Bosco farm. Even school was almost impossible. Due to the goodness of a farmer who taught him, John learned to read and write and do sums at the age of 8. His first schooling came the next year when he hiked some 3 miles every morning to the country school of a priest. But the increasing hostility of his stepbrother, not pacified by John's attempts to put in extra hours on the farm, made life at home unbearable. And so, for the sake of domestic peace, Margaret Bosco divided the paltry estate left by her husband and allowed her youngest son to go to Castelnuovo to attend public school and board with a good family she knew. Alone in the town, John soon learned the hardships of an orphan's life. He worked after school to support himself. Though he was only 15, he labored in a blacksmith shop, then as a tailor, a waiter, a pinboy in a bowling alley, a shoemaker, anything to get a few pennies and ease his mother's burden. At school, he did exceptionally well. True, teacher and classmates had looked upon him as a country dolt in the beginning, but his brilliant memory and steadfast application soon won him everyone's respect. In 1 year, he was ready for secondary studies. As we look back over the records, we find that John did 3 years of high school in one scholastic year and one summer. How he ever succeeded is quite unimaginable, unless we take into account his exceptional memory and intensive study habits. Throughout his schoolwork, John did not lose sight of his vocation, which was now, more than ever, an actual conviction. "I'm going to be a priest," he told his friends, "and I'm going to give my life to the care of boys." By 1835, when John was 20, he was ready for the seminary, taking with him an enviable record for excellence in studies, a reputation for solid piety, and the friendship of countless people in many walks of life. Prominent among them was a young priest, Father Cafasso, now St. Joseph Cafasso, John's confessor, who best understood him and helped him to interpret God's plan. The Life Story of St. John Bosco. Part 3. John Bosco's Ministry Begins. On June 5th, 1841, John was ordained to the priesthood in Turin. He celebrated his first Mass the next day in the Church of St. Francis of Assisi. "During my first Mass," he said, "I asked for the gift of efficacy of speech, and I think I got it." With ordination came the release of a powerful spiritual energy which, joined to his rare human gifts, was calculated to exert a lasting influence on modern youth. The beautiful lady of his dreams was not slow in showing Don Bosco — Don is the title given to priests in Italy — just what she expected him to do. On the feast of Mary Immaculate, December 8, 1841, the first sign came. While vesting for Mass, the priest heard the sacristan shrieking at a poor young boy who had sneaked into the church to get warm. "Here, call the boy back," cried Don Bosco. "He's my friend." The boy came over to Don Bosco. Don Bosco asked him, "What is your name?" "Bartholomew Corelli," the boy answered. "How old are you, Bartholomew?" 16, answered the boy. "Can you serve Mass?" "No." "What do you do?" "I'm a bricklayer," he responded, head lowered. "Your mother and father," Don Bosco continued. "I'm alone," the boy responded sadly. "Can you whistle?" Don Bosco broke in. "Of course I can whistle," exclaimed Bartholomew, laughing. And that friendship, struck up on the spur of the moment, began Don Bosco's worldwide ministry to bring young people to God. He told Bartholomew to stay for Mass. After Mass, Don Bosco told the boy, "Next Sunday, bring your friends here and we'll spend the day together." The next Sunday, four ragged boys, looking badly in need of a meal and warm clothing, came to Don Bosco. They were certainly in very dire spiritual need, and their number multiplied in a few weeks, so that caring for them soon came to be a major problem. "But my girls!" exclaimed the directress of the girls' orphanage, where Don Bosco was chaplain. "What would become of them?" "You can always find a priest for them," said Don Bosco. "These boys, they need me." The Life Story of St. John Bosco, Part 4, The Wandering Oratory. In the 1840s, the slums of Turin were overrun by the poverty that resulted inevitably from sweatshop factories, with their hazardous machinery, child labor, and starvation wages. Walking through these slums, Don Bosco came face to face with his mission. As he visited the prisons with Father Cafasso, the conviction of his vocation seemed to shout within him, "These boys are not bad. Take care of them before they fall into crime. That is your task." With his heart full of trust in his lady and his pockets empty, Don Bosco courageously took up the work. From then on, it was only "give me souls, the souls of young people." Don Bosco called his weekly band of ragged young people the Oratory, a term which to his mind suggested prayer and organized recreation. In the beginning, it was a floating thing, its membership growing daily in large proportions. There was no one place to meet, because in those troublesome times, people were afraid of a large group of working boys. And besides, who relishes the uproar of some 200 boys enjoying a day's freedom from the imprisonment of a factory? Every Sunday, they would meet in a different place, a city church, a cemetery chapel, or an empty lot. Don Bosco would hear their confessions and say Mass for them. An hour of religious instruction would follow, plain, simple talks coming from the heart and embodying the solid truths of the faith. Then the priest would take his band of ragged boys into the country for an all-day outing of games. A final talk would close the oratory day, and the tired bunch would trail into Turin, scattering to their homes along the way. During the week, Don Bosco used to tour the city shops, checking on his boys, making sure they had not forgotten his instructions to work hard and work well. Those were heroic times, those pioneer days, the saint used to call them. Days of strenuous work they were, a shiftless existence that threatened to collapse on any Sunday, a bankrupt enterprise with no capital and very little funds. Besides this, the city leaders, worried by the new cries of freedom for the working classes, eyed Don Bosco's boys as a dangerous, half-baked army of the children of the people, headed by an ambitious priest. Actually, this tired, penniless priest sought only a chance to bring God's peace and order to the hearts of restless youth. In 1846, the first ray of hope broke through the clouds. Don Bosco bought an empty lot and a dilapidated shed in an underdeveloped section of Turin called Valdocco. True, next door was a saloon and across the street a hotel of shady reputation. But what did it matter? The oratory ground was sacred. For as he later learned in a dream, it was the burial ground of the martyrs of Turin. With a roof over his head, Don Bosco knew that his lady had set the permanent basis of his work. The shed he dug deeper and converted into a chapel with a tiny anteroom, and every Sunday 500 boys managed quite miraculously to squeeze into it for Mass. The Oratory of St. Francis de Sales, he called it, because he admired the gentle holiness of this great saint. The location of the shed chapel can still be seen today, the tiny nucleus of a worldwide organization that began in poverty with Our Lady's blessing. The Life Story of St. John Bosco, Part 5, The Orphanage. New fields of endeavor for his boys opened themselves to the saintly priest. Homeless children, many of whom found an undesired home in its squalid prisons, overran Turin. They had to be saved before they fell. Again, a little boy started the project. One stormy night in 1850, as Don Bosco and his mother were still awake and working, a timid knock came at their door. As Mama Margaret opened it, there he stood, tiny and dripping wet, scared, starved, blinking in the light. "Please," he whined, "I'm hungry. Can I come in?" As he devoured a bowl of steaming soup, he told his story. His mother had just died, the farm was taken over by creditors, and he was alone in the world. "He'll stay with us," Don Bosco stated. "But where will he sleep?" Mama Margaret asked. "If necessary, we'll sling a basket from the ceiling for a bed," laughed the priest. The boy laughed too. He was Don Bosco's first orphan.